Bowman, Mr. Delier.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I'm Anthony Delier. I represent Mr. Daniel Bowman. I appreciate your saving the best for last. It's been a long morning for you. I'll try to make it brief. This Court has in the past, in United States v. Johnson, noted that stopping any person who is merely leaving a house where the police suspect illegal drug activity be occurring would not alone justify a Terry stop. And that was 170 F. 3rd 708. I see that at least two of you are familiar with that case. In this particular case, the officers had some information that there was drug activity occurring at a cabin on a 40-acre lot out in the woods. So they went out to investigate. The officer bumps his horn, and the people that are at the cabin come out the 300 yards to the driveway to see who's there. The officer had hidden by then, so they go back in. A few minutes later, a car leaves. The officer's not sure if it's the same one or not. Exits, drives down the road a little ways, and the police initiate their emergency lights, drive head-on to stop the car, stop about 10 feet away from it, and then get out, talk to the drivers, and they smell chemicals that they believe confirm.
Right, they smell the unhydrated. I mean, you know, this whole case is about whether that stop could happen, because frankly, from the moment if the government can get them legitimately up to the door of the car, I think everything else follows that happens. Now, the odd thing about this case to me is that they chose to stop Mr. Bowman that way, because the usual MO is to just follow the car for a while, because sooner or later somebody will, you know, drift over into the middle lane or fail to signal within 100 feet of an intersection or any of the myriad things that create a legitimate traffic stop, and a legitimate traffic stop would admit it, but that's not what they do. And so they either have to say, we get to stop all cars, even driven by people who aren't doing anything wrong, or they have to say that there was reasonable suspicion, as Terry defines that term. So they say, you know, we had Mr. Olmstead telling us about activity on this property and so on.
That's correct. And the district court found that the officer's testimony that it was suspicious that with this short honk they came all the way up, stopped on the inside the gate, but didn't go outside the gate to make sure somebody was there.
And well, they had the informer, and as Judge Wood pointed out, this was a very light, this was kind of minimum Terry stop, right? Because as soon as they got near the car, you know, they smelled the fumes, which corroborated the informant. So it's not, you know, it wasn't a so. They had probable cause before they frisked him or anything like that.
Well, so, right, but did they have any reason actually to ex ante to stop the car?
They had a little reason, right? They had the informant.
I'm not sure the informant.
A little reason for a little stop.
But that's the interesting thing, Judge, because I think the informant goes a long ways towards a reasonable suspicion or perhaps even probable cause.
Right.
Search that property.
To search.
But the officer explicitly testified that he did not know where that tank of anhydrous was located, and he didn't know what the lab looked like or where it was at. It was 40 acres. Innocent people could have come and gone from that property and had no idea that anything unlawful was going on.
No, pretty unlikely. They had to be admitted. They had to be admitted because of the gate, right? You know, if these people are running a meth operation, they're not going to be admitting innocent people to watch, right? So, as you say, they had some suspicion based on the informant, and it certainly was logical to assume that anybody coming out of the property at night was part of the meth operation.
On a 40-acre property, Your Honor, I'm not so sure that that would be true. 40 acres is a relatively large piece of property, and as it turned out in this case, a meth lab can be nothing larger than a gallon jug. I think it would make sense if you were making meth to not keep it in your house, to not keep it.
Well, it's pretty hard to do inconspicuously, though, even with that small size because of the smell and so forth. And Olmsted didn't talk about a single event, but this being done over the course of time as recently as a week or two in advance of the time they interviewed him, right?
That's true. However,
so it's an ongoing operation.
But the question is, could anybody else have been on that property? Is there anything to assume that every single person associated with the 40 acres is involved with the manufacture of the meth? Do you think a bystander in the meth lab has violated the law?
I think that they probably...
Wasn't there a pregnant woman in there?
Yes, there was. But the point is, and actually I think they used the example in Johnson, it literally could have been a pizza delivery person. I mean, it doesn't...
Could have been what?
A pizza delivery person. It doesn't necessarily...
Pizza delivery person.
A what? That was an example from the...
What delivery person?
Pizza.
A pizza delivery? They're ordering pizzas?
Well, no. The people on the land could have asked, they could have gotten hungry and asked for somebody to deliver food. That's the point.
Or they could have had an innocent person.
These people roaming on the land, right? How many houses are there on this 40 acre
track? Just the one.
Just the one, right?
And that, I'd like to just briefly go back to...
So the notion that they're meth people in the woods somewhere and they're not connected with the house? Is that the
idea? No, I think the notion is somebody could be in the house who's not connected with the meth operation.
Right. The notion is...
They could be
making the meth out by a fire out in the woods someplace, and people could come and go from the house. Grandma could come and go. The government actually, in its brief, said that the owner said these people didn't have permission to be there. So,
but wasn't the light going on almost instantaneous after the honk, as though someone was watching?
That's a great question. The light went on 10 to 20 seconds after the honk, but it was summer-like out. They were wearing T-shirts, shorts, tennis shoes. And when somebody honks, there's no other way to tell because it's 300 yards through the trees. The police could barely see that there was a light on in the cabin. There's no way that it made sense for somebody to do surveillance from anywhere near those cars or the cabin because they can't see anything. They wouldn't be able to see the road. It's 300 yards away through the woods. So the idea that there was surveillance makes no sense. The argument that...
Why do you think they drove down to the gate?
Well, when you live out in the country, if somebody comes to the gate, they honk. That's how you know they're there. It's like ringing the doorbell.
Of course, the concern isn't whether there really was surveillance, but whether the officers reasonably believed they were being surveilled, isn't it?
Right, but it wouldn't be
the
reasonable.
That would be suspicious.
That's exactly right, but it wouldn't be reasonable because 300 yards through the woods, it's ridiculous to try to do surveillance from there.
They don't know how this place is equipped, whether they have night vision goggles or people stationed in trees or things of that nature.
That's true, but they also knew that they couldn't see anything except for that there was a light on. They couldn't even identify the building.
So it's three football fields away and there are trees in the way. We don't have a picture of this in the record, I assume.
I don't believe so. See, my time is...
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. DeLay. Mr. Anderson?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Robert Anderson. I'm the Assistant United States Attorney assigned to this case. Privilege of representing the United States.
Mr. Anderson, I have
to
say, unless it's the government's position that all the government needs to do is to identify a place where there might be drug activities, and then there's enough for a brief Terry stop of anybody who emerges from such a place, I don't see how you can justify this. And that suggests to me that virtually every public housing project in the city of Chicago, you can just arrest whoever you want to when they're leaving. There are certain neighborhoods in Chicago that just go ahead and arrest, that the idea of particularized suspicion is just out the window.
No, that's not what I'm saying at all.
See what's particularized, other than knowing that there was a methamphetamine, you know, the informant has said there's drug activity on this property. That's why I'm defining it that way.
But you have
I'm
to look
at... I'm not going so far as saying every house, no matter where. But there are certainly neighborhoods known to the police, apartment buildings known to the police, and for that matter, rural areas, rural properties known to the police, where drug activities are suspected to be going on. And it's your view, I take it, that anyone who emerges from such a place has impugned themselves enough that a brief Terry stop of that car or person walking out of the place or anything is just fine.
No, exactly not. It is only because there are these specific circumstances that we have here and the specific facts we have here.
I find them completely unpersuasive. The fact that the car honks and somebody checks and then goes back again when he's hidden himself. I mean, if he was still there and they saw him, that's one thing, but he's hiding.
Well, this is where I noticed he pointed out the Johnson case right away, which is something that the Judge Connolly mentioned as well. This is where it's distinct from the
Judge
Johnson
Connolly
case, which I know...
this was a very, very close case. Every third sentence in Judge Connolly's opinion is, well, this is close. This is even closer. This is even closer yet.
Well, that's like saying the touchdown in the Super Bowl that went over the plane of the field goal.
I know. You won. But I'm telling you that unless you're going to take the position that I just articulated, that if it's a building and you have reason to believe, some informant has told you that, you know, in the such-and-such complex, there's some people who are dealing drugs... you get to arrest, you get to stop everybody.
No,
I mean, that sounds like a police state to me.
I
want
to distinguish that, because I know you authored the Johnson opinion, I believe.
Well, I mean,
and Johnson was different.
Somebody must have agreed with me.
No, but there was a dissenting opinion in that case, but the Johnson opinion is quite distinct from this. The Johnson circumstances are distinct from this. There they had a vague, unspecific allegation that there was drug activity going on in this apartment complex, which you're referring to. This happens in... public housing complexes all over, some vague, unspecific information from a citizen group or something. The police did talk to the apartment manager, and he said, well, he didn't know anything personally, but he thought that there was suspicious activity going on in these, like, four apartments, I think there were in that case. And the police were doing, in that instance, a knock and talk. They didn't have specific information.
They were planning on doing a knock and talk, and out pops Mr. Johnson. I know. I remember the facts of that
right.
case.
But the difference here
is... So you
is,
think as long as an informant has told you that something's going on inside the place, you get to do a Terry stop on everybody who leaves?
In these...
Why don't you just say yes? I don't understand why you're not willing to...
Because your characterization makes it broader. And in these circumstances,
we had
specific
draw.
Identifiable information from a known informant. He said, I have been there. They are manufacturing methamphetamine.
Right, why does Mr. Olmstead's statement mean that every single person in that place, from a 3-year-old child up to a 92-year-old grandfather and on down, you know, random people who might have delivered food or people who are doing something else, they're all... I guess you've abandoned the innocent bystander theory as well, that, you know, if you're in the room, you're automatically guilty.
Well, there is, of course, a likelihood if that activity is going on. This is not a public place, unlike...
I didn't say it was.
No, but it's different because there is that distinction. It's not a public place. It's a rural location. The people that are out there are meant to be out there.
What would you know what's going on out there. What would you have needed to get a search warrant?
What would it have taken?
You had the informant. What more would you have needed for a search warrant?
Well, I think they were on the they could have gone and tried and gotten a search warrant.
But the
with the probable
that
cause
filed,
that they have.
Which I have in front of me, relies heavily on the information that they received on the basis of this stop.
Right. It's the supplement that corroborates the information that the informant had.
My question is, what would they have had to do before... before the stop to get a search warrant?
Gone and listed all the facts that they had from Mr. Olmstead and all those specifics. He knew specifically what was going on out there. But this court, I know...
Well,
this
are you saying that the informant's information was enough for a search warrant?
No, that's what I was going to say. This court
so
has
what more
has said,
would it,
so,
what
so
more
this,
would have been necessary?
This officer was out there to get corroboration.
What more would have been necessary to get a search warrant?
His surveillance corroboration that there is activity out there, and in this instance, it was a brief, the most brief possible stop that could have happened. As soon as he stepped out of that vehicle, he identified...
The Supreme Court has never said that there are four different standards for Terry stops. They have articulated reasonable suspicion, articulable facts giving rise to reasonable suspicion. They don't say, they've never, to my knowledge, said a hunch is good enough.
And this is not a hunch.
This is a
because
hunch
they,
case.
They had specific information, then they have this suspicious
really
activity.
Saying that the informant, while not good enough for a search warrant, was good enough for a light Terry search, Terry stop.
Well, if you
it's
look
a sliding
at
sliding scale, if you're just going up and sniffing at the car window, you don't need much in the way of a suspicion.
Well, if you look at what the magistrate he went off and looking at this as possibly even a consensual stop to determine if people coming out of there might, like in an airport, might be involved in the activity. But in his opinion, he said all these distinctions that Mr. Delier makes about, well, they didn't know specifically where the tank was on this 40-acre property. That doesn't go to the reasonable suspicion. That would be more appropriate to determining whether there's probable cause as to where the tank was. But you could have less specific information and still have reasonable suspicion. We're not talking probable cause. We're talking reasonable suspicion. All these factors added into those officers' belief that they had specific information. They were out there doing the right thing, which this court has said officers should do, not just go get a search warrant with the detailed and specific information from an informant, but you should corroborate it.
There's reasonable suspicion to arrest everybody who leaves a housing project. There's tons of drug activity that goes on in those projects.
They weren't arresting them. I think this case would be...
A Terry stop of everybody who leaves a housing project.
Right.
We're just checking. You know, and for the people who smell like marijuana smoke or who, you know, are fidgety so that the officer who can't account for themselves get detained a little longer.
Right.
The initial stop. I think you're going to stop everybody.
This, no, clearly
Terry
not.
Stop and everybody.
I may be wrong.
You're
going to
have a
wrong.
Little tiny bit of suspicion about every single person who leaves, so a little tiny stop is going to be okay for everybody who leaves. And then it will ripen into further information for some subset of the people that you've stopped.
Well, that's one of the things in weighing the reasonableness of a Terry stop is
how
much of an intrusion is it.
The distinction you want to make is between consumption and production, right?
I'm sorry?
In the ordinary housing project, presumably they're not actually producing drugs, they're consuming them.
But they possess frequently distribution amounts. It's a distribution amount of something like crack can be as little as a gram.
But when it's being produced, the people involved and the people present are likely to be involved in the production rather than bystanders.
Exactly, and actually,
you know,
weren't
they? I don't make meth with an audience. Of
apparently,
innocence.
They do all the time because people get blown up in these stupid meth labs.
Well, they're part of the operation.
And weren't they looking for a specific guy, Bartlett, that they were told was the cook, and they couldn't identify who was in the car when it came out? They just couldn't see who it was.
Well, within seconds of the stop, they asked him
until,
who it was. He said, I'm Jake Bartel.
Right,
until
that's
they stop.
Post-fact. You can't rely on the fact that Bartlett was in the car to justify the initial stop of the car, because you didn't know Bartlett was in the car then.
But I think I could be wrong, but I think in the Johnson case, things would have been different if when the police were going to knock on the door and that door opened and it was Mr. Johnson coming out, if the police had known, I've known that guy for 17 years to be a drug dealer, and I've heard recently that he's dealing out of this place. Their detention of Mr. Johnson at that time would have been a reasonable stop and detention, as these officers
but
did
you're
here.
Still trying to focus on, I'm focusing on the minute before they look in the car and see Bartlett is there. You know, if the first thing, if Bartlett had just come walking out of the property, sure, stop Bartlett. I don't have any problem with the idea of a Terry stop of Bartlett in that circumstance. But they didn't stop Bartlett. They stopped a car with unknown occupants, and then only later do they see that Bartlett's there.
But they stopped a car coming out of an area where it was known that there was a methamphetamine lab in operation, so that it was likely. And in their belief, they had reasonable suspicion that these people might know something about what's going on there. It also, you pointed out earlier, you were wondering why they didn't just follow the car. Well, this car is coming out of the property. It's heading toward where these officers are doing covert surveillance, pulled along the side of the road with their lights out, this being an area where there's nobody else around. Two guys sitting in a truck near the property watching it would tip off this covert surveillance. They could have made a call back to the property and said, hey, there's somebody out here watching the place. Get rid of the evidence. So they were forced. Their hand was forced then. They had to pull in front and stop this vehicle and identify who it was. If it was somebody, if it was Aunt Mabel and Esther, they would have been going on their way.
That doesn't make any difference because we have to assess stops ex ante. Sure, people, I mean, I can think of many instances of people, some who I know personally and some who I've read about in cases, who get stopped by the police and they're perfectly innocent people and they go their way and a lot of them don't sue because people have other things to do with their life, believe it or not, than bring lawsuits. And so that's a price of this very broad police power that you're arguing for. There'll be more innocent people stopped and harassed and annoyed by the police, and then they won't bring a lawsuit because they don't have the money and the time.
All right, I see my time is up.
Thank you very much, Mr. Anderson. Mr. Delia, do you have anything further?
Please remember one of the key facts is there were only four or five things the informant had told them that could be proven to be true or not. One of them was that Mr. Bartlett would be in a green Mercury Marquis. That's not the car they stopped. It was a red Chevrolet. And then perhaps of even greater significance, the officer didn't say, why? Had reasonable suspicion. He came right out and admitted, I just wanted to find out who these people were. And finally, I don't believe it ever was a Terry stop. Aunt Mabel doesn't get stopped like that. You don't pull in front of a car that's moving and turn on your lights to do a Terry stop. It was an arrest. The officer said they were never going to be free to go. They were arrested from the moment they were stopped, and I think that they should have required probable cause at that time. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Dell, you were appointed, were you not? So we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client, and thank Mr. Anderson as well. And the court will be in recess.